Welcome to the Let's Get Real podcast with Justin and Trisha Davis.
Honest conversations about life, love, and leadership.
Welcome to season four.
What is up, everybody? We are with our good friend, Brandi Wilson, and she is the first ever second guest, repeat guest on the Let's Get Real podcast.
Yeah.
It's a milestone today.
Am I back by popular demand?
Back by popular demand.
And not only popular demand, to date, your first podcast is our number one downloaded podcast of all of our podcasts. Whoa. So,
no, I think.
Brandi Wilson, you're the secret sauce.
So, thank you so much for being back with us. And what's so cool is, I feel like our first conversation, it was during COVID.
Yeah,
we released it in 2022, but it was actually, we'd recorded like a year and a half before that. And you were kind of in the midst of some of the things that are now more in perspective now. Like it was obviously it was a raw and real conversation because we want to have that. But we're here today to talk about your new book, Better Than Okay. And you were, I don't know how to describe it other than you were okay then, but now you're better than okay.
If people haven't listened to that initial one, can you share just a little bit about like who you are, family dynamics as we jump in?
My name is Brandi Wilson. I am a single mom to three sons who are now 22, 19, and 17, which just blows my mind. We live outside of Nashville, Tennessee in Franklin, which is kind of like a modern day Mayberry. And all three of my kids my oldest son just finished his senior football season. And then, my middle son finished his freshman football season at his college. And then I have a junior who plays football at the local high school. So I am loud and proud. And I ring a cowbell like no one's business.
About half the Instagram videos I see are with you at the cowbell.
Well, listen, I had to get a cortisone shot in my elbow last season because I had a terrible tennis elbow. And he was like, "Do you play tennis?" I'm like, "No, but I ring a cowbell. Like, it's going on."
Our son is a quarterback. You would think he would need a cortisone shot, but no, it's the mom of the quarterback.
The best football mom story I've ever heard in my life. Like,
it's true. I got two cortisone shots, as a matter of fact. It was so bad.
That is hilarious and awesome.
I saw that our Jet and Gage, are they in the same conference? Where their schools are in the same conference, so they play each other. That's probably a cool experience. A cool experience.
Brewer nicknamed it Battle of the Brothers. The weekend before, he was like, "Next Saturday, Jet plays Gage in Battle of the Brothers." And I was like, "Yes, that is exactly right." And then they both have cats as their, one's Panthers, one's Lynx. And he's like, "Yeah, let's see who's the top cat." I mean, he was full of puns.
All kinds of dad jokes in that.
So who won this year?
Gage's team won. It's the only time it's happened because Jet's graduating. He's not doing a fifth COVID year. So,
Okay.
Yeah. So it was fun. It was great. They loved it. It was really fun to see Jet's friends interact with Gage and Gage's friends interact with Jet. That was really cool to watch on the field.
Yeah, that's amazing.
If you guys don't know this, we've known Brandi and her boys since like before they were born.
We met Brandi when she was pregnant with Jet.
And so we're both all just shaking our heads because it's just crazy. I mean, Micah, our oldest son is 27. How trippy is that? Like,
how is that possible when we're only 32? Right? I don't get it.
I feel the same way. We don't even talk birthdays. I was writing some copy for my job the other day, and I work with a girlfriend who's been in ministry as long as I have. And she says, with 54 years of combined experience, I was like, absolutely not.
Are you talking about my grandmother?
It's like, no way. 54, do not put that in there. We're no longer friends.
That's hilarious. Well, we've lived a lot of life together. And I'm really excited for this conversation. I think our last conversation, all three of us were pretty like in some raw spaces, and not that life isn't happening now, but just some triumphs and some, you know, declaration of life has happened. And you came out with a new book called Better Than Okay, Finding Hope and Healing After Your Marriage Ends. And I've read the whole thing. Mm-hmm. And we have a bunch of questions for you.
She didn't mark it up at all. All of the postmarks that she is
supposed to make the video. But
I can't read the book if all these post-it notes are in there. She's like, that's where I want to come back to.
Yes. But I want to read kind of what I feel is like this declaration of the book on page 73. And you say this, you say, oh Lord, hope I can read this with, you know, justice. This is what I want you to hear. You might be going through hell right now, but you are going to be okay. You really are. Just take one day at a time. God is still going to use you. You will survive your divorce and the loneliness and come out stronger. He is going to give you strength to see you through. And then you say this, and I think it's just so powerful that I think leads into the conversation today, is don't miss what God has for you right where you are in your loneliness. Mm. And I think the theme of divorce, both Christian culture, personal, relational, you know, outside friendships, parenting, the overarching theme is, you know, the sense of loneliness. And you speak so beautifully into this topic. What was the turning point for you to decide, you know what, I'm going to be better than okay, regardless of my divorce?
Yeah, I think it's hard to nail it down to just one moment where I had this realization of I'm going to make it, I'm going to be better than okay. Because I felt like there were several markers along the way that, you know, when I hit like the divorce being final, that felt like a line in the sand. And when I bought my own house, that felt like a line in the sand. But really early on, I think I had this moment of clarity where, and honestly, I was still living in my home. My ex-husband had just resigned. He was a mega church pastor. So life as I knew it had ended in what felt like overnight. And when your life publicly falls apart, it's been falling apart behind the scenes for a long time. But I still did not expect the way my life unraveled and the speed that my life unraveled. So the same month that he resigned, I remember having this moment of clarity where I just had to stop and recognize that God was still good. And nothing around me felt good. It felt hopeless. I, you know, was battling depression. I was battling anxiety. I knew a lot of stuff that was going on behind the scenes that wasn't public. You know, what do you say? How do you walk your kids through trauma and tragedy? All of those things. But I just had this moment where I'm like, I know God is still good. And if I believe God is still good, then there has to be a way for me to find goodness around me. So I just became super intentional with looking for the goodness of God in my life, even though nothing felt good. And now I know that as a gratitude practice. Back then, I was just trying to survive. But I pulled a journal off the shelf and I started writing down ways I saw God during the day around me. And it might have been just ice cream with my kids or a really beautiful sunset. But it was that reminder that, okay, there are things in my life that are still good and God is going to continue to use me and there will be new to come. One day I legitimately wrote down, I bought a new hairdryer. And while that does not seem life-changing, it is a reminder that there will be new things when it feels like everything you know and life as you knew it has ended.
That's so good. One of the things that I appreciate about your story and just how you've processed it and how you've helped other people process it is in any relational break, whether that be a dating relationship or marriage or even sometimes in, you know, a job, there's an injustice piece to it, right? Like there's a sense of injustice, like this is not fair.
Yes.
Or someone wants the relationship to be restored, the other person doesn't. You just talked about all of the things that you were processing behind the scenes that weren't public, and the injustice of it all, and the lack of accountability of it all. How did you reconcile that not even with other people and not even with your ex-husband, but really in your relationship with God. Like, how did that keep you from not just going, you know, two birds in the air and, you know, God, how can you allow this to happen? But, how, you know, for somebody who feels like there's this been this huge injustice in their life and God was absent.
Yeah.
How did you process that?
Yeah. You know, Justin, that's a great question. And I feel like that's something that I do talk to people a lot about. I actually had a client say to me the other day, a coaching client say, I'm just exhausted by the extreme unfairness of it all. And I just felt that statement to my core. And I think for me, you know, I didn't feel like God was absent, but it's because I kept going to him. Now, that doesn't mean I always went to him in praise and joy. And I went to him, you know, angry and frustrated. And I had times where my kids would leave and go with their dad for the weekend, and I'd shut the door and I'd cuss up a storm, just trying to get the emotions out. I think for me, one of the things I learned is we talk a lot about attachment in today's world, attachment, bonding science. And we talk about it in parenting, and then it moves into relationship, which I know is y'all's specialty. But I think what I realize now looking back is I had never had secure attachment with a male. And I didn't have secure attachment in my marriage. Now, what is interesting is when my marriage fell apart, I really didn't talk to a lot of people. I went from being surrounded by thousands of people to talking to three people, my therapist and three friends. And that was it. I was isolated because I almost chose isolation because I didn't have answers to all the questions when I ran into people. But I just kept going to God. And I went to him when I was frustrated and angry and disappointment and it felt unfair. And he was consistent to stay. And I look back now and I'm like, oh, I developed secure attachment with God during that season because I went to him in all of those, when I was in shambles, when I was feeling shameful, when I was feeling insecure, I went to him with all of those. And he did stay consistent. I think lots of people say God didn't show up and he didn't show up the way we wanted him to.
Right.
Or God didn't show up. Well, did you go to him for him? You know, did you actually seek him out? And if we're not trying to show up, then oftentimes it feels like he's not there for us. And I think that is, and nothing feels good around. So we're not necessarily looking for the goodness of God. He just wants you to show up regardless of what you're feeling. Mm-hmm. And because I think I felt so isolated and because I felt so hopeless, if I didn't have God, I don't know how I would have made it because he is the thing that kept me going on those days where I didn't want to get out of bed.
Well, I think it speaks to there is an injustice, like it isn't fair, right? And so that client that was speaking, like, okay, that is absolutely true, but it can also be true that God is just and that God is good,
for sure.
Even if the situation or this person is so unjust or so unfair.
And we want it fixed here on earth. Like, I want the, you know, the vengeance and the righteousness and the justness to happen so I can watch it.
Because when are you going to write that book? Is that coming? Or I'm just kidding.
But it's that reminder that, man, lots of that stuff only happens in heaven and God's decisions are fair and God is a fair God. So it's
good.
He takes care of his people.
You said something which is really interesting. I think Jess and I are discovering this from a different lane, but I think we realized we loved being in ministry. I know you're still in ministry, but you loved being in church ministry. I think even through the ups and downs, we all like loved church ministry. But I think we realized there was a part of ministry that made us inept in a lot of areas of life when it came to marriage and friendship and just how we lived life, because there was God and then there was this ginormous sifter. That everything went through the sifter of ministry and it, you know, kind of curated how we lived life. And so when that's taken away, it was this reality of like, man, we are kind of newbies in a lot of these different areas of what it's like to walk into a brand new church or what it's like to see that God is good and it's not attached to a church story, but just to ours. And I think you said something that made me think of kind of like, what we've had to learn almost as newbies is you said it was hard to go out because I didn't have the answers to people's questions. In that place of like the person listening that feels stuck and feels both the weight of responsibility to give people an answer that may not deserve one. Mm-hmm. Like, how would you encourage them to find agency of when to let people in and when to be okay to not be okay?
Yeah. Yeah. That's a great question. And I feel like with everyone's story, that's something they have to figure out on their own. When they're willing to share, when they're willing to step into saying the hard things. I think, you know, for me, when I look back, one of the things I had to remember was I just needed to make it through one day at a time. And that became my goal and my, you know, mantra is like, I just have to make it through today. Because if I were to jump ahead and think, where will this be in 6 months? Or, you know, how am I going to put two kids through college at the same time in 6 years? Or all of that overwhelmed me. How am I going to buy a house on my own? I've done volunteer work and part-time jobs as I was a mom raising kids. So you run all of those questions and you get so overwhelmed that you just shut down. And my focus became just making it through one day at a time. So I tried not to think ahead to the conversations that might need to happen in the future, but only deal with what I had to deal with that day. And then I came up with, you know, I feel like there are levels of, for lack of a better term, friendship. And the people who were close to me, they got the truth. And the people who were on the outer edges, I just kind of almost came up with a script that I could repeat. So that if I was at Kroger and I ran into somebody who went to what used to be our church and they asked me what was going on, I had an answer that I felt like was honest and direct, and also memorized. So I wasn't caught off guard, because I think so often we get caught off guard and we feel like we say too much or we say something the wrong way. And then we have all this regret. And then our focus becomes, I should have done it differently. When the reality is, man, you just need to get through the day. And people, for the most part, have really good intentions when they check on you. They just don't know what to say. So if you're prepared when you run into people, that so helps you be able to appreciate the fact that they do care about you and also give an answer that you feel comfortable with.
Talk about just one of the key themes of your book and really of kind of as you help people is helping them process grief. And, you know, anytime a relationship ends, it is the death of a dream. It's the death of that relationship. It can give birth to new things, but there is a process of grief that a person has to go through. How important was it for you to walk through that process? And then how do you help other people walk through it?
Yeah. I think I was shocked at the value that walking through grief brought to my life. I totally believe you have to feel it to heal it. And I knew I was looking for healing from everything I had walked through, and I was wanting to do life better moving forward. So I made sure that I took time to just process my grief and be in it, which is not fun. I'm going to be honest. It's not fun. Yeah. You don't enjoy it when you're in it. I did a ton of journaling about my grief and what I was feeling. I journal probably 5 to 6 days a week, and lots of times write multiple pages, and it's just stream of conscious. I think people ask me about it all the time, like I have some kind of formula, but I'm like, I just have to be done by 8 o'clock. That's my goal. I got to be 8 o'clock by 8 o'clock. So there are times I write half a page and there are times I write 3 pages. But for me, processing my grief was a lot of writing. That is just a modality that allowed me to be able to get what was going on inside of my head and my heart down on paper where it would make more sense, and also dump it out for the day so that maybe I could do something more productive. I think when people are dealing with others who are grieving, I know I have been guilty of this. My best friend, Lori, who both of you know, she did such a beautiful job of giving me time to grieve. Because I think what happens so often is because we love that individual, we hate to see them hurting. So we try to hurry them through their grief in another way of trying to love them well, but we're actually not allowing them to feel the emotions and process the grief that they're experiencing. And for us to be able to say, take all the time you need. It's okay that you feel that way. Everything you're feeling is normal. And to allow people to know that they're not strange. They're not, they shouldn't be over it yet. They shouldn't have moved on by any kind of certain timeline, that they are going to go through the healing process at their own pace. And we, as their friends and support system, need to allow them to do that.
Mm. So good.
The kind of framework that we use is, repair. There's a season where you just are repairing, and then there's reclaim. Mm. So parts of life that, and I think sometimes as friends on the outside, we want to get to that reclaim because we want that person to feel better, that we miss out on, the repair. And I think what I love about your book, there's always a fine line when we talk about our pain to not make it feel like five happy hops to a better you, And I think too, it's like,
if we could figure that out, then we would all be millionaires.
Money.
If there's only five happy hops, man, that seems pretty profitable.
There is the truth. And we've probably played this role in other people's lives, is there are people that aren't ready to be friends with you until you are in the reclaiming season.
For sure.
Your repair people are usually a very smaller group of people. But what I do appreciate, the flow of your book, is you take really deep, hard, complex, kind of chaotic feelings and emotions and thoughts, like, as you said, that woman, talked about the injustice, and you break it down into simplicity that is, it's palatable and it's just so true. Okay. And one of those statements that you make is to recognize there is good in the lonely.
Yeah.
Talk about that a little bit.
Gosh, that's a hard lesson to learn. Loneliness is just brutal. And here's the thing, loneliness is not just part of divorce. I feel like it's part of life. One of the first steps I took in dealing with loneliness is to recognize that I was actually even lonelier in my marriage. And I think lots of times, because we have a significant other, we try to act like there is a warm body sleeping in my bed every night. I am not lonely. I have somebody right beside me. And it's more about that connection, that emotional connection, that spiritual connection. It's about knowing that you are loved and taken care of. It's about giving and receiving. And I didn't have that in my marriage. So I had to recognize I have been even lonelier than this when I was married. And then I had to start digging into myself again, because I'm a 2 on the Enneagram. So I'm really good at taking care of other people. I'm really good at being a support system. I'm really good at being an advisor, and I know my people really well. So because of that, I spent a lot of time knowing them, and I hadn't spent a lot of time knowing myself. So I almost went on this discovery of liking myself again. I was in a pretty dysfunctional relationship. And I think I realized a couple of times when I was traveling for work, I really like myself when I'm away from him. And I made myself post-divorce start digging into what those statements meant. Now, I never entertained them when I was married, because I just, didn't really have the option then, or was too, who knows? There are several reasons we could give. I'm just going to say I didn't have the option then. But I did have to start digging into that on my own post-divorce and learning, okay, who am I really? What is true about me? What do I like? What is my personality when I get to step into who I truly am? So that was actually a lot of fun. It was not necessarily easy. I had to pick up hobbies again, because, I've been, obviously, football mom is one of my hobbies, but I needed more than that, especially on the weekends I didn't have my kids. So I started digging into, what do I enjoy doing in my free time, and what fills me up, and what feels like self-care? If I'm parenting solo, what can I do on the weekends when I don't have my kids in order to take care of myself so that they're getting the best of me when they are under my roof?
I think that's scary. The person who's listening to this going, how do I even start that? That sounds terrifying. Could you give an example of a story where you're like when my parents got divorced, I remember my mom going to the movies by herself.
Oh, gosh.
And I was so sad for her. And she's like, it was the best thing ever. Like, I love you guys, but like, I had my own freaking popcorn and, you know, like, she's like, it was lonely in some respects, but at the same time, it was just like, I really enjoyed doing that. And that's okay. Like, what's kind of one of experiences that you had?
I think what's so interesting hearing you describe that, like, loneliness and freedom, they dance really closely together. And some of it is loneliness, and some of it is you're feeling freedom for the first time in years. I started, you know, here I'm going to tell you, I wrote again. I've already talked about gratitude. I've talked about journaling. I took out my journal, and at the top of a piece of paper, I wrote, "What is true about me?" And I made myself write down things I knew to be true about myself, not what other people told me, but what I knew to be true about myself. And that was huge. It's when I realized that I really like to be playful in conversation and silly and have fun. And I can also dig in and have a really deep, heartfelt conversation. Both of those things are true about me. I just almost felt like celebrating myself, as funny as it sounds. I think probably what has maybe given me that, it's the loneliness piece that I battle now is probably not having someone to celebrate my kids' accomplishments with. I think, you know, my marriage didn't end great. Co-parenting has never been easy. And when my kids do something super significant, I just don't have that person who is as bought in as I am, as, you know, standing beside me as my partner to say, man, we did a really good job with him. So I still get a little lonely there. And then, you know, Trish, I look back at just having these past four football seasons with Jet as a single mom, and I've traveled to a lot of away games, and I get a lot of one-on-one time with him after those games because I'm, you know, the person who's there for him, and I wouldn't trade that for anything. So I think I am able to see, man, I might be lonely in that area, but look how I've been blessed in this area to have this really great relationship where, you know, he and I had one game his sophomore year, maybe junior year, where we are standing on the field talking and we turn around and the field is totally empty. It is just the two of us. And I'm like, man, the fact that my 20-year-old son wants to stand to the point that there is no one left on this field. Well, I can be lonely driving to all these games by myself to get that time with him at the end. So I think it's being able to look at both sides of things.
And you guys have a term for that. Your team. What is you Wait, talk about that? Yeah, us four. I'm like, us. Yeah, I love it. I love
tattoo,
it.
My little us four tattoo going on. And
I think that's just another example of, you're not going to find us four in a book. Well, your book, you will. But yes. I mean, like, it's like finding agency, as you said, of it's almost a determination not to, it's not slap happy positivity. It's gratitude. And then saying, you know what? I do have choices. Right. Like, both can exist. The sadness and the joy can exist, and I can still move forward in a positive way. Sorry, did you have thoughts?
I don't know. You guys need a minute.
We're so glad.
Exactly. I appreciate the opportunity just to listen to this conversation. I think, you know, one of the things that I have really appreciated about just, you know, the journey that you've been on for the last 6-7 years has been your willingness to involve other people not in a public way. It's not like you're, you know, live blogging, you know, the relational breakdown or anything like that, but you haven't shied away from allowing other people to see your hurt, your pain, your journey not even for the benefit of them, but really to bring glory to God and point people to him. Was that natural, or was that something that you intentionally said, I am going through this, I don't want to waste it?
Yeah, that's a great question. I think initially I was probably more conscious of thinking like, how can I help other people? And because I've been a pastor's wife, anyone who is a pastor's wife that went through something similar and ended up separated or possibly divorced, they got connected to me through a friend or a coworker or something. And when I initially started, and you guys probably remember this as well, I would have this conversation and then I'd need to go to bed for like 3 hours because I was so exhausted from almost revisiting what I had lived through. So that was really hard initially. I remember just thinking like, I am not ready for this yet. And then there was a point where I just knew I had done a lot of work. And when I say work, I'm talking about therapy. I did an intensive at Onsite. I saw my therapist weekly for years and years. I'm still in regular therapy. Because what I knew is if I was going to have to go through that suffering, I wanted to use it as a survival guide for others. But I had to make sure that I was dealing with my own dysfunction, unhealth, poor communication, whatever I had going on. So I wanted to make sure I had done my work. So after I dug in and did more of that work, I think I felt more equipped to be able to step in to helping people without feeling like I was reprocessing all of my pain again. I think it took time for me to get to that point, and I think it took a lot of therapy for me to get to that point. But I'm now super conscious of it and enjoy the fact that I can help bring a little bit of hope and healing to people's stories. I had a client yesterday who just wept the entire 60 minutes, and I was crushed for her. And I remember what it was like to be that brokenhearted, that you could legitimately feel your chest ache. And, you know, by the time we hung up, just being able to talk to someone who was a few years ahead of her and had survived and had, you know, found a life that she enjoys living, got her to the point where she made it through the day and she got up this morning. So if I can bring a little bit of hope and healing to help people as they're walking through something devastating like divorce, then I'm definitely willing to do it. And I'm glad to have the time so it doesn't knock me out like it used to initially.
Yeah. One of the things that, you know, people used to ask me a lot is, do you feel like you're living in the past? And I don't want to forget the past because I don't want to repeat it.
Yeah.
But I feel like now I'm telling a story about somebody that doesn't exist.
Yeah.
Right. So I'm far enough removed from it that even though, it is Justin Davis and I did struggle with these things and I did have an affair, that person is dead. I mean, that person is gone. And it's almost like you're telling stories about the person that you were when you were married, but you're not that person anymore.
Right.
Right. And so that's the hope that no matter what you're going through, that God makes all things new, and it might not be instantaneously, it is through a process, but that process of transformation is worth it.
Yeah.
Well, you are a light and we're grateful. I mean, the world is benefiting from your willingness to do the hard work. And I think there are people that are listening that need to hear what that repair season looks like. And it is brutal and it is hard, but it was never for the purpose to become a person, the expectation the world has. It's to become who God called Brandy to be and who God called Justin to be. And it's just your willingness, though, to use that to help light the way is such a gift. And so I'm so grateful for you, and I'm grateful for...
I have one more question, sorry.
Oh, no. I was just telling her I was grateful for her, but...
the one question that I had that I didn't write down is
to coach us right now in this session.
I don't do relationships. I just do something.
The one question I had is, I think you posted something that said the reason why every married couple should read a book on divorce.
Yeah.
And I'd love for you just to kind of, for the people who are listening, they're like, well, this doesn't really apply to me because I'm not divorced. What would you say, or what, you know, what would you give as the reason that every married person should read, the book on divorce?
Yeah. First off, we all have someone divorced in our life, whether they're walking through a divorce or have gone through the divorce or they're in the process of a separation, and those people need support. And I think we spend a lot of time doing what we think is helpful to them. And I actually in my book walk you through how to best support a person walking through divorce. So if you have a if you are a support person to someone in your life who is walking through a divorce, the book is a great resource to let you know how to love them really well. Secondly, the concepts that I talk about are not just concepts that apply to divorce. As you guys have mentioned, I talk about grief and loneliness. I talk about gratitude. I talk about dating. Again, I talk about parenting through trauma and tragedy. And those are all things that we walk through, when we go through difficult things in life. So I think it applies to people who are grieving. It applies to people who maybe have had a major life transition and they don't know what their next step is. I think it can apply to people who are overwhelmed that they're starting all over. Yeah. So there are lots of reasons that I think the book is for more than just divorced people.
Yeah. Preach. It's true. So my last question, since Justin got a last question,
my last question
is the person that, you know, is like searching for, you know, next steps. Can you share a little bit about like what you do in your coaching? And obviously we'll put all the information in the show notes, but kind of really what is your lane when it comes to coaching?
Yep. Yeah, I do. I work with a lot of women who are walking through divorce and a few men. I've got a few men, male clients. But I love to help them figure out what a fresh start looks like and what new looks like in their life. I had a session last week with a woman who has walked through a really traumatic divorce, and it has been rough, and she is starting fresh again, and she feels like God is calling her to this super specific ministry. And just to be able to speak into her words of encouragement, but also help her see where she's gifted. And whenever you tell somebody else the stories of what's going on in your life, you have that ability to be able to clearly see what God is, you know, doing for them. So to be able to help her connect some of those dots and pull some of those common threads together was really great. And then I also deal with the lady, like I talked about yesterday, who's just heartbroken and in the point where she, you know, does not want to get out of bed in the mornings, and to help her be able to look around and see the goodness of God and also acknowledge your pain is normal. Everything you're feeling is what you should be expected to feel when you're walking through a divorce. So I kind of run the gamut of talking to women who are experiencing divorce and starting all over again.
That's amazing.
Is there a last question? I promise.
No, she gave me a hard time. Now she's asking two last questions.
Trying to one up, Justin. Anything that like you're excited new or, you know, kind of next for, one of my favorite chapters in the book is Brandy Gets Her Groove. I can't wait to hear what is in this, but like any new grooves going on with you?
Oh. New grooves. Any new grooves I want to talk about on the podcast. Yeah.
We're going to talk about those when we stop recording, but.
Oh. I will say I'm excited about, I'm taking my kids to New York for Christmas. So, you know, one of my goals as a single mom is to redefine family like nothing is missing. And for me, that involves travel. Ooh. So we're doing Experience Christmas and I'm taking them to New York in a couple of weeks. And we're just doing 4 days of being tourists. And hopefully, Justin, I'm working really hard to try to get Knicks Nets tickets.
Okay.
They're playing while we're there. So we're going to try to catch a basketball game and just do all the things, Empire State Building, all of that. Be tourists for a few days.
That's so awesome.
That's awesome.
That's awesome.
I love New York. I've only been there like in short doses. Like Trish and I went there for like 12 hours one time when I did a wedding. We went into the city, and then we were doing a marriage conference. We drove in and went through the 9/11 museum, which was powerful. Yes. But I would love to have 4 days in New York
City. I took Isaiah and we did a mom son trip, and we did the city. He's like, yes, it was me.
I set her up with the city pass. You should do the city pass.
Worth every ounce of
it's basically I think it's like $120 or something like that per person. But you get like six like sites that you get to see, plus you get a bus ride to all of them. It's unbelievable.
Yeah. Okay. So to the listeners, if you go to New York City for Christmas,
this podcast is sponsored by the New York City Pass.
But I do want to say, this is the thought I want to end on. It was Will you restate that about your family experience? Like you are, say that statement one more time.
My goal was to redefine family like nothing was missing.
Redefine family like nothing is missing. That is powerful. Okay, I'm truly closing this podcast now.
She's like me preaching. She just keeps going.
Keeps going.
But we love you and we are cheering wildly for you. And it's just such an honor to, you know, be a small, small part of this journey with you. So look forward to the next book.
I know, me too.
Talking about transitions.
Something that we are pros at.
It is true. And speaking of transitions, we have a great weekend experience that is really meant for couples who are pretty much in transition. Maybe you're like transitioning out of a season of life or transitioning just out of a really difficult time and looking for a way to reconnect. And Refinest Weekend is taking place the weekend of May 3rd through the 5th in the beautiful Virgin Hotel, which is in the district of Music Row. It's just a really cool vibe. And we'll talk about a little bit more of that. But if that is something you are interested in, where can they find information?
Go to refineus.org/weekend. And so we'd love to see you. We have a few slots left. And we'd love to see you May 3rd through the 5th at the Refinest Weekend. Talk to you soon.